Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You're listening to NBC Sports Philadelphia. The guests you want to hear from, the Phillies information you need. It's At the Yard with Jim Salisbury.
Though he now wears a New York Mets uniform, and before that, a Boston Red Sox uniform, Ruben Amaro Jr. has a long history with the Phillies as a player and front office executive. Many of the players that have made the Phillies postseason contenders this season came into the organization during Amaro's tenure as general manager, and one of them, Aaron Nola, is vying for the Cy Young Award. Amaro is currently the New York Mets' first base coach. He aspires to manage in the big leagues or possibly return to leading a franchise, much like his good friend Howie Roseman did with the Eagles. Hello and welcome to another edition of At the Yard. I'm Jim Salisbury, and we're presented by Deborah Heart and Lung Center. If it's your heart, demand Deborah. Visit demanddeborah.org. And now my conversation with Ruben Amaro Jr. Ruben, we have a great Cy Young race, well populated by National League East pitchers. Aaron Nola, who you know a little bit about. Jacob DeGrom, who you know a little bit about. Max Scherzer, who you've seen a lot. And, you know, the Fulton Evich kid down in Atlanta has pitched very well, but it's going to be a three-horse race. Scherzer, DeGrom, Nola. You're with the New York Mets. You see DeGrom every fifth day. You know Aaron Nola, as I said, very well. Handicap this thing with about 3 weeks left.
Well, it's been a tremendous race as far as the pitching is concerned. Outstanding arms throughout the National League East. And even on our own club, we have several great arms at Syndergaard and Wheeler throwing really, really well at times. But when you talk about Scherzer, the Cy Young master, so to speak, he's been outstanding and will continue to be outstanding. He's had a great year this year, obviously. Aaron Nola has been fantastic. It's been really nice to watch him mature. He's already a fairly mature kid coming out of LSU, but he certainly has developed into a top of the rotation, number one starter, particularly this year. And I've got a chance to be real close with Jake DeGrom, you know, every time he goes out there, and he's been extraordinary. He's been so consistent, and his level of consistency, even under great duress, you know, he's pitched in situations where he's had zero or one run to work with pretty much every single time out. So his support has not been great, neither defensively nor offensively. And I mean, he continues to dazzle. So it's been really, really exciting to watch these young pitchers develop. But I have to say, if I was going to handicap it 1, 2, 3, I would have to go with DeGrom, Nola, and then Scherzer, and only because, you have to pick one, and if you have to pick one, I think that DeGrom certainly deserves it.
At the moment, I don't disagree with you one bit. He is a phenomenal pitcher, former college shortstop, great arm, great athlete, beautiful delivery, the way he paints on that outside corner and then breaks that slider off the plate. Do you think that, you know, he's got a low win total, but he's pitched for a team that hasn't scored? Do you think the voting has sort of changed over the years where that's not held against a guy, just the number of wins, that voters seem more enlightened and dig deeper into statistics?
Yeah, the King over there in Seattle, I think that set the tone over there when he was chosen. And I think he only had maybe 10 wins that year and won the Cy Young Award in the AL probably about 5 or 6 years ago, maybe even more. But I think there's a precedent set there. Unfortunately, Jake doesn't have a ton of wins, and he may end up, you know, pitching under 500. I hope he doesn't. But I think the precedent is set. I think the writers see and can. I mean, if you look at throughout throughout baseball, throughout any kind of statistical analysis, which has gotten very, very popular, obviously. You know, Jake's at the top of the ticket, I think. But he's a great athlete. What's the thing that's really sets him apart for me? Scherzer's a very good athlete as well as Nola, but I think Jake being an ex shortstop, his ability to swing the bat, his ability to make pitches when he has to, I think that's all part of his athleticism. And his competitiveness. You know, the great ones can make the pitch and dial it up when they have to, and he certainly has done that. You know, we watched it with Roy Halladay do it at times. We watched it with, you know, Cliff Lee, or even at times Cole Hamels, you know, in Philadelphia. But you know, the great ones, you know, the Scherzers and the Kershaws and those guys, they can really dial it up when they need to. And you know, Jake DeGrom has certainly done that this year.
So we're sitting here in Citi Field, the Phillies' last visit to Citi Field of 2018. It's a Saturday, Friday night, last night. Aaron Nola pitched, picked up his 16th win. You have such an interesting history with Aaron Nola. Drafted when you were the Phillies GM. I know you scouted him. When you watch him pitch, from the first base coaching box, now he's a rival. It's almost like an out-of-body experience.
It is kind of neat, and it's interesting. A little surreal, certainly. And having to, you know, prepare for him and, you know, our running game and that sort of thing, which I'm in charge of. But it's you know, it's really fantastic for him. I'm really happy for him as a person and as a player. He, when we drafted him, Mike Stauffer, who was the area scout down there, watched him. He must have been since he was a baby, but he's known the kid. Friday night pitcher every single time out in LSU, SEC, huge crowds. I mean, pitching in the SEC and pitching with 15,000 people pretty much every single time. And the way he handled himself, and Mike Stauffer brought Pat Gillick and I in to watch one of the games. And we sat behind home plate and really enjoyed the way he competed. That was the thing that really struck me. His stuff was very good. He had very, very good stuff as far as being able to execute his pitches for a young player and for a kid in college. But what was the most impressive thing to me is he dialed it up even at the times when he needed to in big parts of the game. I believe he was pitching against Nebraska in a big part of the game in a close game. And, you know, he was probably sitting at 92, 93 all game long. And then all of a sudden, you know, big spot came in the game. He was 94, 95 and throwing in on those guys using aluminum. And that's that was impressive. But Mike Stauffer had been tooting his horn for a long, long time. He'd been on him for a long time, knew the family well. Obviously, it's a very athletic family with the brother, you know, having played in the big leagues as well. So, you know, it was really neat to be able to come down there and watch him really perform.
And he was kind of right up your alley in those days. You were looking for pitching. You were looking for advanced pitching that could come quickly. And he's done that. There was talk, and Pat Gillick actually talked about this last month when he went on the Wall of Fame, talked about scouting him and said, yeah, I thought I was looking at a quality major league pitcher, you know, maybe a number two, number three, and Pat said he's better than that. How about your impressions in terms of projection and versus where he is now?
Yeah, I thought he was going to be probably sit at a number solid number three starter. You know, you're pleasantly surprised, and I'm not all that surprised that, you know, from the program he came from, the poise he always showed when he pitched in the SEC, as I said, he just came very quickly, very, very poised, very steady, and, you know, I'm just not surprised that he has gotten to the point where he's as good as any number one starting pitcher in major leagues right now.
And I've always heard he had a changeup at LSU, just didn't need it with that good fastball and with that breaking ball. And now he shows that changeup a lot. It's quality. Did you see the changeup when you went to Baton Rouge?
You know, we saw it in warmups. He didn't use it a lot during the game. But, you know, we believed, or at least in my estimation when I was watching him, that, you know, there was a projectable changeup in there. And he was such a good athlete, and he had such a nice, clean delivery that you know, we felt like he was a guy that was, had at least the aptitude to be able to utilize that pitch, and certainly it's become a weapon for him. You know, those that's part of development. You know, that's part of becoming a major league player is being able to hone some of your craft, and he certainly has done that.
Was he like you were? I remember that spring you were on the road a lot scouting. Gillick was out there, obviously Marty Wolliver and his guys were out there. I mean, did you see the big kid from Houston, Tyler Kolek, who went to the Marlins? Carlos Rodon. I mean, Schwarber went right ahead of Nola. Was he a consideration, or were you so onto Michael Conforto? Was he went three picks behind Aaron Nola? Trey Turner went just beyond early teens, and Sean Newcomb, who's pitching for the Braves. All of those guys have turned out, gotten to the major leagues. Were they considerations as you picked number seven that year?
Absolutely were. In fact, I saw every single one of those players you mentioned personally, except for Michael Conforto. I know, remember Pat Gillick telling me this guy can really hit. He did go out there and see him. But I got a chance to see Turner and Rodon on the same team. All the other guys, Kolek, we got a chance to see. I thought that was the biggest arm I think I'd ever seen out of high school in my life. Very, very impressive. I did not see Schwarber. I misspoke. Pat did see Schwarber, thought he could swing the bat. Wasn't sure whether he was going to be athletic enough to be able to either stay behind the plate or play another position. I got a chance to see Sean Newcomb up in Hartford. You know, really for me, all those guys were, you know, kind of possible considerations. We felt like since pitching was so important to us, and since we had such a good track record, that Marty decided that this was the right guy to pick, and he did a nice job.
Another pretty good player who ended up with the Phillies in that draft is Rhys Hoskins. What do you remember about the Phillies kind of tracking of him and drafting of him?
I think the biggest thing about Rhys was his bat. He was a bat guy. He really was not a very good defender. In fact, he had to come a long way to be just a kind of an adequate first baseman is what we were thinking at that time. But obviously worked very hard and became an even better hitter than people probably had projected. But certainly a bat that we liked. We picked him fairly high. I think he was a fifth rounder. So we certainly liked him. We just didn't know, you know, how far that bat would come.
I remember he was drafted, 14? So maybe it was around a year or so later, he was putting up big RBI numbers, asking you about him. And you really liked that bat once he got in the system after a year, year and a half or so. What jumped out about you with him when he was a young pro?
Just a really mature approach to the game. I think he understood how important it was to drive in runs and to utilize the entire field. Pretty impressive ability to use right center to left center, to be able to use a big part of the field when necessary. I think that was the thing that he became a little bit of my dark horse, just having watched some of him, watch him play some, and also watching him, you know, analytically, statistically, watching him develop. So it was pretty impressive.
As I mentioned, we're on a Saturday night at Citi Field, and Zach Eflin pitches tonight for the Phillies. Another guy with a real strong link to you, because as the Phillies embarked on their rebuild, he was the first, quote-unquote, rebuild trade. I remember it well at the winter meetings in San Diego, and he went for a club icon, Jimmy Rollins. What impressed you about Zach Eflin? Again, you were in that quest for pitching mode. Why did you target him? What did you like about him? And kind of, as you watch him now, what are your impressions?
Well, we had some inside information about what kind of pitcher he was in San Diego, and we did some very, very good scouting on him. I think the projection was he was going to have a power sinker, which was important for us in Citizens Bank to keep the ball down, and good size, good projectability, you know, it's nice to see him. You know, it's nice to see all these guys develop and become the players that they've become. And I think Eflin's got a chance to have an even higher ceiling than some others. There were some people while they were pitching together in our system that felt that Eflin might have had a higher ceiling than even Nola, even though he didn't have the same arsenal. Eflin's got great stuff. Got a nice demeanor. Real competitive kid. Good background. Good family background. And it's just another guy that, you know, you hope you hit You hit on these guys, and fortunately, these guys are now becoming viable major league pitchers.
Your expression, you had inside information. I am not doing my job as Angle Boy. I am not doing my job as a reporter and an ace podcaster if I don't ask you what was the inside information you had on Zach Eflin.
Well, we had a lot of we had some people in that system that we had some information that could give us information, and we had good relationships with them. And I don't want to name any names, but that's part of the scouting process, part of the process of trying to find out information. And Pat Gillick was always the best in the world at that, and hopefully I learned a little bit from him.
He was great at sniffing out about a guy's character. He would talk to the clubhouse attendants, the laundryman, the bat boys, the bus drivers, the he just worked every angle, didn't he?
I think it was important, and I've learned that learned some of those tricks from a couple of different people, and certainly Dallas and Ed and Pat Gillick. Pat, probably one of the reasons why he's a Hall of Famer is because he had those kind of relationships with all types of people, from the PR people to the clubhouse managers to the to anyone you could think of who could touch a player. I remember one time he made a phone call to a coach in Utah about a player who was it was Brian Mueller, who was trying to rehab back, and we were looking for pitching and pitching depth. And I remember him dialing the number without even having to look it up. Pretty extraordinary stuff. But that was the beauty of Pat, and that was why he was so highly revered. Also, because he had such great relationships with everyone, and certainly served him well.
I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Ruben Amaro Jr. Coming up at the yard.
Philadelphia fans are passionate, and, there are times when they're going to love you, and there are times when you're not going to be so happy with you, and that's kind of occupational hazard in Philadelphia. But all in all, when I get back home and I spend time at home, fans have been very, very, kind of very gracious. So I went to the Eagles game the other night. There were some people who recognized me, in the stadium, and I had a lot of people come up to me and say, thank you, thanks for all you did, and that's a nice feeling, too.
That's next after this health tip from Deborah Heart and Lung Center.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is At the Yard, the podcast.
As you look across the diamond at the Phillies, Cesar Hernandez is out there. I mean, you've known him since he's a baby. I mean, coming out of Venezuela. Kingery was drafted when you were the GM. Michael Franco, you've known him since he was a baby. Alfaro, you traded for Alfaro. You traded for Nick Williams. And there's others, Eflin, Nola. And now the Phillies are, I still think they're a rebuilding team in a lot of ways, an ascending team. Their better days are ahead of them, but they're getting a nice taste, and they're in contention this year. Do you get a little bit of, what emotion, a little pride when you've seen their development and the season they've had?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly feel a lot of pride because I had my hand in some of these things, and many people while I was there in Philadelphia had should feel very, very good about the work that they did, the pro scouts, the development people, Joe Jordan, his people. They all had a hand in continuing to develop these young players. You just never know whether they're going to be moving in a straight line. No one necessarily moves in a straight line when they're moving through a system, and you just don't know what kind of major league players are going to be. But it's really nice to see some of the kids mature. So happy for guys like Cesar Hernandez and, even a guy like Aaron Altair who's now developing. I mean, he sputtered a little bit, but still, he's still growing in a lot of ways. Obviously, Kingery, I got a chance to watch him personally in Arizona and got a little inside information from his coach about him and what his makeup was all about, and was another one of those reasons why we drafted him so high, is because such a quality makeup kid. Being able to watch some of these kids grow and develop and to contend now, I mean, listen, they're in second place right now. They're fighting. They have a chance to maybe win the division. Obviously, being employed by the Mets now, it's my job to try to knock them off and try to do our best against them. But would be inhuman if I didn't think about in the hopes that if the Mets can't be there, it'd be great to see the Phillies do some damage there and just to have been part of that. It's a nice feeling.
Two other guys, Quinn and Herrera. Didn't even mention those.
That's right.
Herrera, a great Rule 5 find.
Right. Yeah, Mike Ondo did a really nice job with Odubel. Had some another one of those situations where we had inside information from George Verlandia and my dad and some people in Venezuela that had some information about him as well. So
now I'm sorry, George was his GM in winter ball?
I believe, yes, he was. He was his GM in La Guaira, as they say it in Spanish, but a team I actually played for years ago for 1 year. But we had some information about him and what kind of hitter he was, and Mike had worked hard to get a lot of background on the kid, and he's made himself a pretty darn good living so far.
What's it like, being, a Philly player, a Philly executive, and they're, the Mets have always been such a big rivalry, and now you are a Met. What is that all like?
My kids weren't very happy about it originally, other than the geography, because I'm closer to home. But I remember my youngest saying, "Dad, do we really have to put Mets, paraphernalia on now? Do we really have to?" I said, "Well, they're paying the checks now, so you better." I'm here really, and it sounds cliche, for the love of the game. I love being involved. It's been a really cool perspective to be on the dirt, so to speak, at this level. I had been at 500 feet for a long time, and now I'm on ground level, and that's been a really enlightening experience for me. I think it's, if I ever get an opportunity to get back into the front office at some point, it gives me a tremendous perspective about what's happening on the field, because I'd been away from it. I really hadn't been in uniform for 20-some years. So that perspective has been great. I've enjoyed my time in the last 3 years, 2 years with Boston and playing in that very difficult AL, the AL East, which is a beast. And the intensity of that, obviously playing in the National League East, which has its own level of intensity, and the fan bases that are so demanding. It's been a great experience for me, and who knows what's going to happen next.
Are the fans good to you when you come back to Philly? Because now you're out in the coach's box, and you're right in the line of fire.
I hear a couple of things from time to time, but actually most of it's been pretty positive. I mean, I think, the Philadelphia fans are passionate, and there are times when they're going to love you, and there are times when you're not going to be so happy with you, and that's kind of occupational hazard in Philadelphia. But all in all, when I get back home and I spend time at home, fans have been very, very, kind of very gracious. So I went to the Eagles game the other night, watched our Eagles win, which was awesome, and a little sloppy game, but certainly being able to win sloppy is important too. But But, you know, there's some people who recognize me, you know, in the stadium, and I had a lot of people say, come up to me and say, thank you. Thanks for all you did. And that's a nice feeling, too.
You have one of the most impressive and diverse resumes in baseball in terms of, I mean, you've played, you've done everything. You've been on the executive side. Now you've been as a coach, 3 years as a coach on the field. What course, what path do you kind of want to go down here in the future? Would you like to stay on the field, maybe manage? Would you like to get back upstairs, as you said, 500 feet away and be a GM again? How do you see this thing shaking out?
You know, it's a great question, Jim, and I think about it a lot. I don't really want to keyhole myself into any one thing. I'm keeping very open-minded. I would love the challenge of being a manager. I think that that I'm as prepared as anybody else to be able to do that at this stage of the game. People are coming from all, you know, shapes and sizes and different occupations to become very good managers without necessarily having managerial experience. But, you know, I loved the opportunity to be able to work with people to build an organization. And that's a special thing to be able to do for a city and for an organization and for a fan base. And if I get an opportunity to do that, you know, I would be open to that as well. So it'll be interesting to happen, see what happens over the next couple of years. But I'm glad I'm involved in baseball. It's really been my whole life. Not sure what else I would do if I wasn't involved in baseball. And I just like to make as much impact as I possibly can because I love the game and I love working with baseball people. It's been, so far this career has been very, very fun. I hope to be able to do another 10 or so years.
There's transition in the Mets front office. Do you think that would ever be a possibility?
I've expressed my interest in that possibility, and they know that I have some interest in possibly being involved. But, you know, it's a little bit of a, strange optics. You know, it's a strange sort of situation. But I think also do have the experience of having, you know, seen what goes on here at the ground level and have the experience of having had success at the major league level in this division. So, not sure what's going to happen as far as that is concerned, but I have expressed my interest, and we'll kind of go from there.
Well, I'm sure something good is going to happen, and I appreciate you being with me. Just before we go, Ruben, give us an Eagles prediction, because I know you're a huge Eagles fan. For the they're 1-0, and you were at that game. How does this, how does the year after the Super Bowl shake out?
I think in a lot of ways, this is going to be a year of, it's going to be a difficult year. Whenever you're the big dog, there's people going to be trying to knock you off, and it's going to be a difficult process each and every week there. I mean, I'm not a football aficionado, but I do know sports, and one of the most difficult things in the world is to repeat, particularly in a Super Bowl situation, a championship situation like that. But Howie's done a great job of, you know, churning the roster, moving the roster around. I have a great respect for Howie Roseman, good man. Glad he's back at the helm, and what he and Mr. Doug Peterson have done, and Jeffrey, pretty extraordinary. So happy for the fans. As a fan myself, I was totally on the wagon, and will continue to be so because, I'm a Philadelphia fan at heart.
Little known fact, you and Howie Roseman are pretty tight. You guys are good buddies. What is that relationship like? Do you talk sports? Do you talk baseball? Do you talk football? Do you bounce ideas off each other as two executives?
Probably all of the above. I think one of the things that's most impressive about Howie is even when he was kind of in that transition phase and in a little bit different role, he continued to try to work to make himself better, to learn more about different perspectives, to learn, what it's about to be a leader. And I'm not sure if a lot of people know, how much work he's done off the field to prepare himself to be the leader that he is. And so that's the most impressive thing to me, thing that I've learned from him. And I'm, trying to kind of follow in his footsteps in some regard because he's a self-made guy. He's worked very, very hard. And I think people would be very impressed by what goes on behind the scenes, not necessarily on the football field or in the football office, but what he did to prepare himself to get himself to the point where he is now.
Very interesting parallel between you two guys.
Yeah, I mean, we've taken different paths.
But you were in the front office. Now you're in another arm of the team. He was in the front office, moved to another side. Right. He returned to the executive level and running a team, and Bill's a winner.
Yeah, and I'm hopeful that the things that I'm doing now and the perspective that I'm getting, it makes me a better executive if, in fact, I get that opportunity to do that. There's just so many things that I've learned. The game continues to develop and change and morph into different things. The analytics become more important, and then there's pieces of analytics that you can probably discard. There are pieces of analytics that are absolutely fantastic that I've gotten a chance to embrace me personally in my coaching. And, you know, getting that perspective has been, you know, really tremendous for me.
Ruben, great stuff. Thanks for being with me.
Absolutely, Jim. Good to see you.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Ruben Amaro Jr. as much as I did. Be sure to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Jim Salisbury. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time at The Yard.
Thanks for listening to At The Yard on NBC Sports Philadelphia. Be sure to subscribe to At The Yard wherever you listen to podcasts.